What's going on, everybody? It's be your boy
DJ Anonymous.
DJ Anonymous with another episode of Sports Biz Music, the podcast. And on today's show, I have a very, very special guest on the show. I have Jake Tribby, staff writer and lead USFL analyst at Fantasy Points. How are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just, you know, taking it easy, taking one day at a time. So before we get into the podcast and the questions and whatnot, you know, introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah. So, I'm a staff writer and the lead USFL analyst for fantasypoints.com. As you said, most of my work involves, writing fantasy football articles, mostly revolved around, daily fantasy sports. So like DraftKings, FanDuel, stuff like that. And I also will do work with, best ball. So like the stuff you see on, Underdog. Betting as well.
Okay. And we're gonna talk a lot about that today. But what made you want to get into this field, as far as like fantasy sports and betting?
Yeah. So it's a bit of a long story, but I've always loved sports my whole life. You know, I played football growing up, played football in high school. And, unfortunately, you know, kind of tore my knees up in high school. So never really, you know, managed to, you know, pursue football, you know, deep into high school or anything like that. And felt pretty burnt out on sports overall. You know, when I left high school, but, one thing that I did sort of find, while I was injured was, daily fantasy sports. This was right around 2014, 2015. So you really couldn't watch like an NFL game without seeing a FanDuel or DraftKings commercial. Right. And I figured like, okay, you know, I'll check that out. Like, you know, you see these commercials and all these guys are talking about winning all this money. I'm like, yeah, you know, that sounds kind of fun. So I played and I was, you know, I was terrible at first, but I was immediately hooked. I thought this is so fun. This is awesome. Like, I really want to figure out how to get good at this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ended up going to college and sort of took a break from DFS for a couple years. And something kind of changed when I did an internship. You know, I went to the University of Cincinnati and they have a great,
shout out to the Bobcats.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. They have a great program, their co-op program where they, you know, they put you in internships. So you kind of take a semester off school and you work full time for like a semester, which is a really great experience. And I ended up doing an internship, you know, in an office, I won't say where, but I just hated it. I just couldn't stand it. Like, I didn't understand how there were so many people who were just like content with this super boring office life. Mm-hmm. And so I figured like, all right, well, I have to do something to sort of, you know, get away from that path. Cause I was, you know, that's where I'd end up if I didn't do anything. And, that was when I really started pursuing like DFS really hard. And at first it was just like, okay, I'll just take whatever extra money I can. I'll devote as much extra time as I can and just really dial in on DFS. And I started reading a lot of like Pro Football Focus content. I found, one of my favorite writers, Scott Barrett, at the time. I was reading a lot of his articles, and eventually I kind of got to the point where I thought like, wow, you know, I think I can write articles that's better than a lot of the stuff that I read. I didn't write for a little while, but I, you know, sort of played around with the idea. I ended up writing a little for fun, I think, in the end of the 2018 season for the Super Bowl, and posted some articles on Reddit that got pretty good reception. So that was a little encouraging. And then I found out that Pro Football Focus was actually located in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, and I think this is like a great thing that people can do, is I just reached out to some people that work there on LinkedIn. And I said, you know, basically, hey, can I have an internship? And I guess it was just right place, right time, because, you know, thankfully they said, hey, we actually need an intern right now. So we'll take you. And so I ended up at PFF, and I didn't get any writing opportunities there. It was excellent, excellent experience. And I learned a ton. Like, you know, I mean, there's no better environment to learn about football than a place like, Pro Football Focus. And, you know, after that, I worked at Roto Grinders. You know, they were kind enough to let me write about an idea that I had had for a while on a way to sort of, evaluate whether or not DFS players were like a buy low or a sell high based on salary movements, which and ended up not being like the most successful article ever, but I was very grateful for the opportunity because they were the only people who would let me write at the time. Mm-hmm. And near the end of the 2020 football season, I actually wrote an article called Why Wide Receiver / Cornerback Matchups Don't Matter for Fantasy Football, because that was something that I had seen touted quite a bit online, was that, oh, you know, you need to pay attention to the corner that's guarding the wide receiver, you know, when you're evaluating a fantasy matchup. And I thought that that was incorrect because of how coverage works at the NFL level. Mm-hmm. It's extremely complicated, and it's very, very rare that you have one single player guarding another wide receiver for the entire game.
That's true.
Yeah, so I basically just wrote an article like summarizing those thoughts, and I ended up getting, you know, very, very lucky because it blew up on Twitter, and my current boss, Scott Barrett, ended up finding it, and he, you know, basically slid into my DMs and was like, hey, you know, we'd really like to hire you. And a few months later, I was working at fantasypoints.com. So it's definitely been quite a journey, and I've had to have quite a bit of luck involved. But mm-hmm. It's been great, and I mean, I absolutely love the job I have right now.
I mean, that's the sports industry in general.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I got my bachelor's and master's, you know, in sports administration. But mm-hmm. I remember in my master's program, I actually went to St. Thomas University for my master's program. And a lot of, you know, it had some people from different, you know, you had people from Park and Rec, people that was athletic directors. You had sports agents. You had people who worked for, like, you know, NASCAR and everything. And you know, one thing they always said about especially working in the sports industry is that, you know, you always gonna start, you know, low, but as you build, it's gonna be a fast pace. And just hearing your story, you know, just a bit of your story, it's you know, it's encouraging, because with me, I never even thought about even doing like a podcast, you know, based on pretty much sports and biz and music until like about 4 years ago. And hearing from other people, you know, they always say that, you know, you have to start from somewhere, whether it's, you know, doing an internship for one of the, you know, the best companies in the, you know, in all the sports, you know, in PFF, and or just starting your own, you know, company or business or something like that. Or working part time mm-hmm. and just building, so that's always encouraging.
Yeah. That's something that I really agree with. Like, I think, you know, if you have a goal, like, step one is just, you know, trying. Like, just try anything. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised at what they can accomplish if they just kind of, you know, just try.
mm-hmm. So for me, I'm gonna tell you my experience a little bit, because I've been fantasy sports, especially, like, you know, NFL and football and whatnot. I started around that time, like, probably like 2013, 2014. Mm-hmm. And it was only like maybe four of us at the time. And then we expanded the league in 2016. So it became like 8 to 10 players. Mm-hmm. And whether it's for money or not, like, it's addicting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
it's very addicting. It's very competitive because, you know, me growing up, I was a person that, you know, I played Madden a lot, especially franchise mode, 2K, you know, NHL, like all the sports games. And, you know, playing fantasy sports, it makes people feel like, you know, they could be a GM one day. And
yeah,
especially when the league is so big, because I have a cousin, his league is about 16 of them. So, oh, wow. Like, and I actually won, not this past year, but the year before, a couple years ago. And I told him, I said, man, I had to be on people. I had to watch people waivers. I had to, if someone dropped a player, I had to make sure I was the first one to, you know, to be there, because it's like, it's like time consuming. Like, during the season, I barely be on social media. I barely be on, you know, doing other things. Like, during the week, I'm just on my app making sure, hey, my team is looking good. So
yeah,
it's crazy, man.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean, man.
It's crazy. So, Let's talk about, you know, your time, you know, working at the USFL. I understand that the USFL, they just came back from a hiatus. I think there was the USL was out in the '80s, right?
I think it was the early 2000s. I'm actually not super familiar with the, you know, the early roots of the league.
Yes. Tell us about, like, you know, like your time, you know, being there so far, and like, what do you see, like, the, I guess, the potential of the league, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah. So my role with the USFL is I write DFS articles for fantasy points in regards to the league. So like top fantasy plays, stuff like that.
Okay.
What I sort of see, like, with the league going forward is, I mean, I think there's 100% a place for spring football in the United States. And I just think, like, it's a matter of getting, you know, the organization right and the funding right to the point where it can be long-term sustainable. Because, I mean, you watch the games and, like, every team, you could name a player or two who should get a shot on an NFL roster. Like, these aren't bad players by any means. And the games, for the most part, have been pretty entertaining. I mean, obviously, the quality of football isn't NFL level. But, like, you know, the games are close and they're, you know, for the most part, still pretty exciting. And, you know, from a fantasy perspective, there's plenty to like there. There's a lot of opportunity. And I think part of the reason that I like gambling on the USFL more than the NFL is because the edges in the USFL are much, much larger. You know, you have so many eyes on the NFL. It's really hard to find that, like, diamond in the rough, you know, that player that no one else is considering, you know, whether it's DFS or season long. But with the USFL, you know, that's much easier to do. So that's part of the reason I love the league. When it comes to long-term sustainability, though, I think it's tough because they're going to get the direct competition from the XFL next year.
Oh, yeah, it's coming out next year.
Yeah. So, like, it's hard to see both leagues surviving long-term, but I do truly believe that there will be a long-term winner because, it just makes sense. Like, there's only 32 NFL teams, but there's still a tremendous amount of football talent out there that's not in college anymore. I mean, there should be opportunities for those guys to show they can play in the NFL. And I think people want to watch it. I mean, the USFL's viewership numbers, you know, each game is getting like a million and a half viewers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's interest there. So I'm definitely optimistic at the future of spring football. I'm not sure if the USFL is long-term sustainable. I mean, we'll see how they do versus the XFL. But I'm optimistic overall.
I only seen a few, games this year because, you know, My Miami Heat, they in the playoffs. Florida Panthers, they in the playoffs. So, you know, I really try to be in tune with the postseason. But I love football. And for me, the more football, the more, you know, it's better for me. But to talk about the XFL, I think, in my opinion, I feel like well, we have to see when did they have like a actual release date for the XFL?
So I believe it's going to be the week after the Super Bowl. So I don't think the leagues will be competing like over the same time frame, which kind of throws an extra like wrench into things. So they won't be competing like directly for viewers, I suppose, because the USFL didn't start until like late April, if I remember correctly. So I
feel like it should be. I honestly want. I think it would be good for the sport just to have, you know, multiple, you know, leagues run, especially during the spring, because it's so slow. Like, once, you know, NFL is over, then the draft is over, then you have you know, of course you have basketball and hockey what they playoffs, but once that's over, you know, all you have is just baseball, NASCAR, and like, tennis and golf. But, you know, people, you know, we in America, people love football.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like, I think just depending on how everything is next year, I feel like two of the leagues, both of them leagues, they could last. I hope so. You know, especially with all this talent coming out, you know, kids being undrafted or, you know, even they do, you know, get drafted, you know, stuff just, you know, happens and, you know, it's always the next man up. So I always want to see players, you know, revamp, because I know a lot of players from high school that, you know, could have made it to the league, but they never had an opportunity, you know. So, you know, leagues like the USFL and the XFL could hopefully turn something, you know, it may not be bigger than the NFL, but it could be something like that people will pay attention to, especially during the spring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, I think a really good example of kind of what you said is DeAndre Johnson, who's the one of the quarterbacks of the New Jersey Generals. Like, yes. he was a Florida State quarterback, ended up getting kicked out of school. Then he ended up on Last Chance U, you know, never made it back to D1 again. But then you see him play in the USFL and it's like, wow, this is a really good player. You know, like, this is a guy who should probably be on an NFL practice squad. Mm-hmm. And this is the only opportunity he's going to get to, you know, to show that. And if it weren't for the USFL, he may never get that opportunity. So yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely great to see stuff like that.
And, what's your feelings on, like, I guess the new landscape of as far as like on sports betting? Because in some states that's fully legalizing it. You know, I'm from Florida, so I think platforms like FanDuel is not legal to play here yet. But they trying to, you know, for every state they trying to make sports betting legally, like just legalize it. So as far as like betting, like how you feel about the landscape so far?
I mean, it's obviously really encouraging to see so many states pushing for legalization. I think most people would probably agree it'd just be way more convenient if it was legal all over the country and you didn't have to worry about what state you were in. I unfortunately I live in Northern Kentucky in the Cincinnati area. So I don't, you know, I don't have access to legal sports betting directly, but I can drive to Indiana like 30 minutes away and place bets there, which is great. Cause it's nice to have, you know, the ability to place bets on like FanDuel and DraftKings alongside like the offshore sports books, which, you know, like basically any American can bet on. My only like major concern I'd say is that I don't really see American sports books making a huge effort to, one, like be their own bookmaker. Like a lot of them are outsourcing their odds. Like they're paying a company to get their betting odds and they're not doing it themselves. I also don't see them like representing as good of a customer experience compared to some offshore books. Like I've heard a ton of horror stories about people like showing up to a, you know, a legal sports book and saying like, hey, I want to bet, you know, $1,000 on this NFL draft prop. And then they say, okay. And then change the line immediately and then give you the new odds before you can, you know, bet the old line you wanted, stuff like that.
That's scary.
Yeah. Which like, you know, isn't illegal by any means, like they're within their rights to do that, but it's, you know, it's kind of it's a poor customer experience. So I'm definitely glad that consumers are getting, you know, additional options with the, you know, the increase in legalized betting. But I do have like some minor concerns over sort of how the operators are handling their business.
Yeah. Cause I agree. Cause with me, even though I play fantasy sports in certain years, we'll have like a pot and whoever wins, you know, they win the pot. I'm not big on betting or big on like gambling, but like as far as like, you know, just looking at like how sports is and, you know, I love sports. For me, I'm more, if someone was to ask me, would you go to a casino to play roulette or something, or would you just bet on games? I said, I'd just rather just bet on games, because growing up, I remember my dad used to take me to the horse track, and that's all he did, like, you know, during the day. And he'll literally ask me like, hey, just pick a number, pick three numbers. And it was just like a religion, like especially down here in the South, like you know, it, like it's a religion. You know, they have horse races, dog races, like it's ridiculous. But just seeing it grow, continue to grow over the years, it's crazy. And but you're right, like I feel like you know, once people you know, stop playing with the, you know, the whole operation and make it more, I guess, like more fair and more like have people more comfortable about betting, especially in sports. I feel like it'll grow, you know, even more the next 5 to 10 years.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it's gonna be a rocket ship. Even if the customer experience were to stay, mm-hmm. you know, not great. Like, I mean, people want to gamble on sports. Like, that's just a fact. So.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the topics that I've been talking about, especially people that's been in the sports industry, is the, you know, the NIL deals that's been going on in college football mm-hmm. and college basketball throughout the whole college sports. And what's your take on that? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a hard time not being like super pro guys making money. Mm-hmm. You know, like these college football players, like, they're putting their body through as much as like NFL players are, and they, mm-hmm. you know, beforehand just weren't getting compensated for it. Or, you know, if they were, it was under the table.
Yeah, type under
stuff.
The table.
And like, when I think of like some of my favorite college football players growing up, like Mike Mickens, who went to the University of Cincinnati and was an amazing corner, was an All-American, but mm-hmm. tore his knee up and never played in the NFL. Like, he never made any money off of being a football player, despite being one of the best corners in the country for, you know, a couple seasons in college. And that just doesn't really seem fair to me. Mm-hmm. I do understand, like, I kind of get the complaints where people say, like, oh, college football has now become like NFL free agency with no salary cap or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, what was happening, you know, 10 years ago? Like, it's not like these guys weren't getting paid. It just wasn't out in the open. So I'm not sure you can really say, like, you know, it's a huge problem all of a sudden, because this has always been true. Like, we know, you know, the big programs have been paying players for a while. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's part of the way they get, you know, so many good players. So, yeah, I mean, I always like seeing guys make money.
Yeah, like I'm, you know, I'm more, I do want the players to get paid. I just don't. I'm kind of the same way when other people feel like this is like. I just don't want the game to become too pro-ish. Like, I don't mm-hmm. want it to, because, you know, like I said this in a lot of episodes, you know, growing up, you know, in Miami, I love my Dolphins, but I was more of a Hurricanes fan. Like, I just mm-hmm. love college football way more.
Yeah.
But from the last, you know, few years, the NFL kind of, you know, they kind of been better than college football just because, one, the college football playoffs is something that needs to be, you know, handled, needs to be expanded. Two, it's just so much stuff going on. 1 minute, because we, you know, as a Hurricane fan, I went through it too. You know, remember years ago when Miami got in trouble because of one of the boosters was paying like players like Sean Taylor and Antrell Roe and all them, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we was pretty much, we was hurting for like years. I feel like maybe 2018 was probably like the first year where we actually had all of that was gone, because mm-hmm. when Al Golden was the head coach, we were still suffering from them losses, from them scholarship losses. And plus, you know, when you have schools like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, mm-hmm. Oregon, like when them schools that just come down here and recruit, you know, our players, you know, that hurt, you know, a team like Miami. But the one thing I do want them to recognize is that, you know, give back Reggie Bush his Heisman Trophy. Like,
oh yeah, no kidding.
give it back to him, because, you know, like you said, this has been going on for years. Like, I remember I was watching the 30 for 30. I ain't finished it yet, but the Pony Express with SMU.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like in what, the 70s, 80s? So
mm-hmm.
it's like this has been going on for years.
and they came down hard on SMU, which mm-hmm. I think that may be like one of the other good things about the whole NIL stuff is that like before you had very unequal enforcement of those rules.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, schools like Miami and SMU got punished a lot more than, you know, an Ohio State or Alabama would, maybe right. because they didn't get caught, but they were probably doing the exact same thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a few years ago, like North Carolina, like with their basketball team, they were like faking classes and stuff like that. And nothing happened to them. Like, yeah, it's like crazy. And then, you know, like SMU, they get the death penalty and their football program's like non-existent for like 10 years in the 80s.
When my thing is when you have schools that use women to recruit players and they only get like mm-hmm. 5 to 10, not even 10 years, they got what, like a probation or something like that. I think that happened to mm-hmm. Oklahoma State and LSU, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. But then you have these, you know, these kids getting paid under the table and they get years, everybody get years of punishment and stuff. That don't fit right with me, you know, because mm-hmm. when you hear Terrell Pryor saying that, you know, I'm a star player at Ohio State, but I'm eating Roman noodles every day, like,
yeah.
that hurt.
Yeah. Know? Oh, yeah.
It's crazy, man. It's like the Wild Wild West, you know, but.
Yeah. No kidding.
So, being a Bobcat alumni.
Bearcat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bearcat.
You're good.
Bearcat.
No worries, man.
I knew. I got confused with St. Thomas because they the Bobcats. But the Bearcats, how did it feel to have this team, even though, of course, y'all went up against Alabama and whatnot, but mm-hmm. to even being the first, I guess, group of five school to even, you know, go to the playoffs, like, how was that?
Man, it was, I mean, it was incredible. So I was very fortunate this year. I think I got to attend either 7 or 8 games in person, which was just awesome. I mean, this was like the best team we've ever had. Mm. People knew kind of going into the season that we would be competitive. We would be up there. Mm. I don't think anyone like really anticipated us, at least among, you know, Bearcat fans, to be as good as we were. I mean, it was an incredible roster. I mean, after LSU and Georgia, like we had the third most players drafted this year.
Yes,
like it was as good of a roster as like the highest tier programs in college football, which like given the resources we're working with is like a monumental accomplishment, I think, because our football budget's like 45th or something out of the 120 schools. And yeah, we were, you know, probably the third or fourth best team in college football this year. So yeah, I mean, as a fan, it was awesome. You know, it sucks we didn't win the national championship, but I don't, even if we had beaten Alabama, I don't think we could have gotten past Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia was the team to beat this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no kidding. But, I mean, it was, like, it was everything I dreamed of. Like, I mean, so many great memories from the games, and, yeah, it was awesome. I'm definitely going to remember this season for the rest of my life.
And I was rooting for y'all because I like the underdogs. I like the smaller schools.
Oh, yeah.
You know, me, I went to I'm a Hurricanes fan, but I attended FIU for mm-hmm. my studies, and you know, I just love the storylines of, you know, schools that, you know, smaller schools, smaller programs that's making a noise. And plus, anyway, like I was saying earlier, you know, college football, one of the reason why it's kind of been lacking as far as like the seasons, it's so predictable now. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, of course, you know, with Georgia was kind of not surprising, but like we still had to wait maybe 4 or 5 games to see who was Georgia. And then after when they blew out Arkansas and they went on that run, mm-hmm. we was like, yeah, this is the team that's gonna win, you know. With Alabama, mm-hmm. you know, Alabama, Clemson's, you know, them two teams, you already know, even before they even get on the field, like, yeah, they're going to win the national championship. And just to see a team like Cincinnati to come in and just blow that open and say, hey, we're here, I love it. And then y'all going to be good. Y'all going to the Big 12, I believe, next year.
Oh, right? Yeah, I think we have 1 year left in mm-hmm. the American, and then we'll be in the Big 12 in 23, which is great because I think we're going to get at least 1 year of being able to play like Texas and Oklahoma before they go to the SEC. So that is like, those games will be awesome, because like part of our problem too is like, we could never get a home, like when we were in the American, at least we could never get a home game against a school like Texas or whatever. Texas. They wouldn't play us at our place. They make us play them, you know, at Texas. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity to be able to play like these powerhouse programs at home, even though, you know, Oklahoma and Texas are leaving the league soon, is, you know, really excites me.
But even when they leave, you still got teams like a Baylor.
It's still a huge upgrade. Yes. Yeah, it's a huge upgrade over the existing league. I mean, there's a big difference between like playing East Carolina week 8 and playing West Virginia week 8, right? So
pretty is different.
Oh yeah.
So I have a couple more questions for you. The first question is, I guess, where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's really hard to say. So I'd really like I love writing. Mm-hmm. I'd really like to stick with writing regardless. I guess it would really just be a matter of like sort of like what kind of content I am writing. Mm-hmm. One of my goals in the future is to hopefully, and I'm not sure if this will happen anytime soon, but to hopefully sort of regain more control of my own time. Not necessarily because like I want to work less or whatever, but because I just want to, there are certain things, like you could call them like vanity pieces or whatever, mm-hmm. that I want to write that maybe don't fit in with, you know, what my employer is going for. Mm-hmm. You know, they may want certain kinds of articles and I may want to write slightly different articles, but you know, obviously, you know, they pay me. So I got to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe like ideally, you know, hopefully gaining some more financial freedom so that I can have more of my own time to write, you know, the pieces that I want to write for fun. I think would be great. I'd also really like to get to the point. So like, I was very fortunate to have a great mentor in Scott Barrett sort of helping me learn how to write and all that. Mm-hmm. And while I don't think I'm quite at the point to where I could mentor someone else, I think in, you know, 5 to 10 years, I definitely would be good enough to be able to do that. And I'd really like to help, you know, someone else sort of get their foot in the door, you know, with fantasy writing and, you know, help them build connections and, you know, figure out what it takes to be a great writer. I think that would be, you know, a really special opportunity. Beyond that, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I just really like to be the best writer I can be. And, you know, I've always, DFS is like another thing that I've just been grinding so hard at for so long. And I've never, mm-hmm. you know, I've had some good wins, but I've never had like, you know, the life changing, like 6-figure wins.
Yes.
So hopefully, you know, hopefully in 5 or 10 years, I can look back and say like, oh yeah, you know, I won, you know, 100K in like week 13 of, you know, mm-hmm. 2024 NFL or something like that. I would say those are probably like some of my immediate goals.
And then do you have any advice for I guess journalists, particularly in the fantasy sports world, because I see that's even growing, like as far as like journalism, it's a lot of writers, it's a lot of podcasters, it's a lot of shows mm-hmm. that just dedicate themselves to fantasy sports, like, so you have any mm-hmm. advice for them?
Yeah, so I mean, it's obviously an incredibly competitive industry. Mm-hmm. So I think like a big part of it is like really getting, like really dialing in on one particular thing and trying to be as good as possible at that thing. Like fantasy sports is very broad, mm-hmm. but if you're like one of the best dynasty guys or one of the best ball guys, like that's a much easier sort of like niche to fit in than being one of the best fantasy guys. Because being one of the best fantasy guys, I mean, you're competing with like Matthew Barry and Mike Clayton and like Jeff Ratcliffe and Evan Silva, like the legends of the fantasy industry who have been around forever. Mm-hmm. But if you're, you know, if you're getting into like a more niche category of fantasy sports, like the competition is just lower. Like there's less people mm-hmm. competing with you, and that'll like, when you get really dialed in on one particular thing, it also kind of allows you to get really, really good at that thing. So yeah, becoming, you know, one of the best at one of those like more niche fantasy topics, I think is like a really good way to sort of inspire, you know, people to follow you and read your work. Mm-hmm. Something that worked really well for me is just reaching out to people and yeah. asking for opportunities. You know, I think that's not like, if you're, especially if you're trying to get into writing, you want like writing samples or whatever, so that you have something to present people to show, you know, that you have an ability. That was part of my problem when I worked at PFF was, like, I told them, I was like, I want to be a fantasy writer. And I had never written anything before. So, like, you know, they weren't going to take my word for it. And I just never really ended up getting that opportunity there. And I had to sort of write on my own to prove to people that I, you know, was capable of doing it. But yeah, like just reaching out to people and asking for opportunities, especially if you already have, you know, some samples or something, I think is tremendously, tremendously valuable, because you really never know when someone could be, you know, looking for an intern or looking for, you know, a writer. And a lot of the times, like, sites don't even, I mean, this sounds crazy, but a lot of the times sites don't even announce that they're looking for those people. Like, you know, a lot of people in the fantasy industry are pretty well connected. So they might kind of say amongst each other, okay, we need a part-time staff writer. You know, I know so-and-so, you know, so-and-so, let's reach out to them and see what they can do. So yeah, just, you know, just by reaching out, and sort of asking for opportunities, you might stumble upon a company who's like, oh, we actually were looking for someone, and we think your samples are pretty good. You know, we'll give you a shot for this year. That was basically how I got all of my opportunities. And, I think there's plenty more out there, for the people who are determined to find them.
Yeah, that's great advice, especially, you know, we in this day and age where there's just so much. Every time you look, it's a new company coming up, and I wish I had this when I was in school.
Yeah,
if I was in school, I talk to a lot of college students, and I tell them too, you know, especially with most of these internships right now, like, they're paid now, so not only that you're learning learning the basics and you learning more about the company and about your position and your career, but you also getting paid for that too. So that's a double-edged sword. Like, you know, you getting both the best worlds and stuff. So it's dope.
Absolutely.
My last question is, who's in your top five as far as, like, football players of all time? It don't have to be professional. It could be professional, college, football player. It don't matter. Just, like, top five, you know, football players of all time.
Okay. All right. So this will probably have to be in no particular order.
Okay.
Reggie Bush would be the first one that comes to mind, because he was like, I feel like, you know, I was probably, what, like, 8 or 9 when he was, you know, like, at the peak of his powers at USC.
Oh, so we were around the same age, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, but watching him play, like, as a kid, I was like, I want to be that guy. Like, that's who I want to be. Like, I want to be the running back who's, like, making everyone fall over and stuff like that. So, like, I loved watching Reggie Bush. And I think I had, what was it, NCAA football 05 or 06 or something. I mean, man, that was, just so, so fun.
Him, Lindell White. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Another one that would be up there for me would be Alvin Kamara. He's just like, I mean, he moves like no one I've ever seen. Like, his balance is just incredible. So, like, I've always felt so, so impressed with him. I think I could throw Lamar Jackson in there too, as, like, you know, that, like, when you're making NFL players fall over, like, you're just a ridiculous athlete. So I, like, those are two guys that I just, like, modern day, that I just absolutely love to watch. I already mentioned him earlier, but one of my favorite players growing up was Mike Mickens at UC, just because he was such a great lockdown corner. He was also, like, very undersized too, and I have a lot of respect for guys who, like, play above their weight, so to speak. That's four guys. Who would round it out? I think Pat Tillman from the old Bears teams. Peanut Tillman. He was like, when you talk about, like, physical corners, that's, like, one of the first that comes to mind. I mean, the peanut punch and all that, you know, very famous for forcing all those fumbles. But, like, him, like, what, you know, growing up watching, like, him, I'm from the Chicago area, so watched a lot of him and, like, Urlacher on that defense. That was really impressive, and definitely some formative memories there.
Yeah, I'm glad you spoke about that Bears defense, especially with Reg Grossman at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I tell people this all the time.
Oh, man, yeah.
Reg Grossman was so lucky. to have a team like that, especially that defense. Oh my God! Like it was
He had no business being in the Super Bowl, and the rest of the team just carried him there.
I think Lance Briggs was on that team too, right? It was a lot of people that was on that team.
Oh yeah, it was an excellent team. They were amazing, and in the Super Bowl, I mean, it really just came down to one team had Peyton Manning and the other team had Rex Grossman.
Yeah, and y'all had Devin Hester. You know, that was fun to watch. You know,
man, I just remember going absolutely nuts with my family when he returned that opening kickoff. I couldn't believe they kicked it to him. I mean, no one thought they were going to kick it to him, and they did.
So before we end the podcast, you have any shout outs, any recognitions before we close it out?
Yeah. So, I mean, fantasypoints.com is where you can find all my work. We have an incredible staff of writers, me, Graham Barfield, Scott Barrett, Wes Huber. If you're interested in USFL, I publish a weekly piece, typically comes out either Friday morning or Friday afternoon, depending on what the schedule is for games that week, where I just go over like the top DraftKings plays, for tournaments. So yeah, if you're playing any, USFL DFS, definitely check that out. And then, for the rest of the off season, I'll be writing, primarily about, best ball. So like, those underdog contests and stuff like that, talking about, values, sleepers, all different kinds of things. And then, once football season starts, I'll be back on the NFL DFS grind. So I'll probably be publishing, 3 to 4 articles a week, related to that. So yeah, if you want to check any of that out, follow me on Twitter, at Jake Tribby, and check out fantasypoints.com.
And I will be following you, because man, I'm trying to win all three of my leagues this year. one
particular. I wish you luck, man.
Thank you. Cause one league, I'm always, either ranked one or second in the league. And I always lose in the second round. Like, that's how crazy fantasy sports is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing too, is like, you could have the best fantasy team all season, but the playoffs, it's just 1 week. So, you may have the most overpowered team possible, and you still just get unlucky and lose that week. So
either with injuries, people rest, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, man, thank you for coming on the show, man. I appreciate you taking your time, just to come on the show. And hopefully you can come back on the show, and I'm gonna follow you and your news and everything and your articles, and man, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me on. I'd love to be back. It was a great conversation.
Of course. And as for everybody, this has been your boy DJ Anonymous with another episode of Sports Biz Music the Podcast with my boy Jake Tribby, and we out. Peace.